Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is October 2nd, 2020, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Two Can Make It? Less likely to have another stroke, but more likely to have a bleed. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Barbara Backus. She is an emergency physician at the emergency department of the Erasmus University Medical Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. She is the creator of the Heart Score and still an enthusiastic researcher. Welcome to your first, and I hope many, guest appearances on the SGEM.
Well, thank you, Ken, for the invitation. And it's really nice to record this podcast with you.
Well, you wanted to give a shout out because you had a little help in putting this podcast together with me.
Yes, certainly. I would like to say my special thanks to Benjamin Gerritsen, who's an ED resident in Rotterdam, for his help with the critical appraisal of this article.
Well, I think this will be a fantastic episode because it's going to be the Ken and Barbie show.
Sure, it will be one to remember.
Oh, it will indeed. Now, you are the real superstar. It's not Ken, it's Barbara who's the star because you created the Heart Score. Can you give the SGEM audience just a brief history of how that all came together?
Well, perhaps it was just a matter of being at the right place at the right time when I met cardiologist Jacob Six some 40 years ago. Together, based on our experience with chest pain patients, we created the Heart Score and started validating it in a small cohort of 122 patients. The results of that first retrospective study were so promising that we expanded the validation studies with a multi-center and a multinational study, and since then, the Heart Score has been studied and adopted in emergency medicine worldwide. I really like seeing that the Heart Score has been adopted in many guidelines and that we now have a broad variety of publications on the use of the Heart Score with different types of troponin.
So this all got started about 14 years ago. I think, were you a resident at the time when this all took off?
Yes, I even started my residency when I met Jacob Six. So I combined residency with my studies on the Heart Score for several years.
So if you're a resident listening to this now, oh yes, Barbara has set the bar very high. We covered a study of the heart pathway on SGEM 151. Is there any new study coming out that we should all know about?
Yes, definitely. There are a few studies coming out soon. We have a nice study on the inter-observer variability of the Heart Score between physicians and paramedics that will be published soon in the European Journal of Emergency Medicine. Furthermore, Phase 3, which is the implementation study of the famous triage study, will soon be published, discussing the use of the Heart Score in the pre-hospital setting with a point-of-care test in the ambulance.
I look forward to reading those publications, but we're not going to be actually talking about a Heart Score paper today. We're talking about something else. So can you give us a case?
Well, let's talk about a 65-year-old man with a history of well-controlled hypertension who presents to the emergency department and is diagnosed with a mild stroke with an NIHSS score of 3. He is a non-smoker, not diabetic, and has never had a stroke before. The only medicine he takes is an angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitor, and you are wondering if he should be discharged on just aspirin or aspirin plus another antiplatelet agent like ticagrelor.
Acute ischemic strokes represent the leading cause of disability in our society and the third most common cause of death.
Yeah, aspirin has been used to prevent a subsequent stroke in patients who suffered an acute ischemic stroke or transient ischemic attack, which occurs in approximately 5 to 10% in the first few months after the primary event.
Trials have shown mixed results with the combination of aspirin with clopidogrel in this population. SGM number 24 reviewed a randomized control trial of aspirin versus aspirin plus clopidogrel in patients with recent symptomatic lacunar infarcts identified by MRI. Adding clopidogrel to aspirin did not reduce recurrent strokes, but did increase the risk of bleeds and death. The study was stopped early due to harm and lack of efficacy.
Yes, in a randomized controlled trial done in China, in patients with minor strokes or TIAs, who were treated within 24 hours after the onset of symptoms, showed that aspirin plus clopidogrel is superior to aspirin alone for reducing the risk of stroke in the first 90 days and does not increase the risk of hemorrhage.
Well, there's a third RCT assigning patients with minor ischemic strokes or high-risk TIAs to aspirin alone or the combination of aspirin and clopidogrel. This trial was also stopped early because of the lower risk of major ischemic events, but higher risk of major hemorrhage with the combination therapy compared to aspirin alone.
And as an antiplatelet agent that blocks the P2I12 receptor, clopidogrel requires hepatic conversion to its active form, though a pathway that is ineffective in 25% of white and 60% of Asian patients. So its efficacy is therefore uncertain in these patients.
Ticagrelor is a direct-acting antiplatelet agent that does not depend on metabolic activation. A trial of ticagrelor alone did not show a benefit over aspirin in preventing subsequent cardiovascular events. The effect of the combination of ticagrelor and aspirin on prevention of stroke has not been well studied. Well, that's some background information. Let's get to a clinical question, Barbara.
Yeah, my clinical question would be, is the combination of ticagrelor and aspirin superior to aspirin alone in reducing the risk of subsequent stroke or death among patients with acute non-cardioembolic cerebral ischemia?
And what reference do you have for this?
The reference is Claiborne Johnston et al., ticagrelor and aspirin, or aspirin alone in acute ischemic stroke or TIA, which is published in the New England Journal of Medicine in July 2020.
All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population that they included in the study?
They included patients aged 40 years and older who had had a mild to moderate acute non-cardioembolic ischemic stroke.
Okay, what they meant by mild to moderate was that they had an NIHSS score of 5 or less.
Or patients with a high-risk TIA.
And so they defined high risk as having an ABCD squared score of greater than 5.
Or patients with a symptomatic intracranial or extracranial arterial stenosis.
And the stenosis had to be greater than 50% of the lumen narrowing, accounting for the TIA. Now, there was a number of exclusions, and I'll list those in the show notes. What was the intervention?
The intervention was 30-day regimen of ticagrelor.
Yeah, and what they did was they loaded everybody up with 180 milligrams first, and then they dropped down to 90 milligrams twice a day.
And they added aspirin.
Yeah, and the aspirin, again, was at the higher dose on the first day, so they had somewhere between 300 and 325 milligrams for the first day, and then they went down to a low-dose aspirin, anywhere between 75 to 100 milligrams daily. What did they compare it to?
They compared the 30-day regimen of matching placebo plus aspirin alone.
All right, let's run through the outcomes. What was the primary outcome?
A composite of stroke or death within 30 days.
And how about the secondary outcomes?
The first subsequent ischemic stroke, incidence of disability within 30 days, and adverse events.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, among patients with mild to moderate acute non-cardioembolic ischemic strokes, or TIA, who were not undergoing intravenous or endovascular thrombolysis, the risk of the composite of stroke or death within 30 days was lower with the ticagrelor aspirin than with the aspirin alone. but the incidence of disability did not differ significantly between the two groups. Severe bleeding was more frequent with ticagrelor. All right, now we need to run through a quality checklist for randomized control trials. There's 11 questions. You ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
All right. Were these emergency department patients?
Unsure. They did not explicitly state the patients came from the ED, but we think they probably did.
Were the patients adequately randomized?
Yes, they were.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Yes.
Did they do an intention to treat analysis?
Yes, they did.
The study patients were recruited consecutively.
Unsure. They did not state consecutive enrollment.
Were the patients in both groups similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes.
Was everybody blinded to group allocation?
Yes.
Was everyone treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes, they were.
Did they have complete follow-up?
Yes.
Do you think they considered all patient important outcomes?
No, I don't think so.
And the final question, the 11th question. The treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
Yes, it certainly was.
All right, let's run through the key results. They had just over 11,000 patients that underwent randomization. The average participant was 65 years old, and more than 60% were male. More than 75% had a history of hypertension, and 91% presented with ischemic strokes. 13% of patients were taking aspirin before the initial index stroke or TIA. What was the big key result from this study?
So in summary, the big key result is less strokes and more bleeds in the combination group with no statistical difference between the two groups for good neurological outcome.
And to remind everybody, the primary outcome was stroke or death within 30 days, so that composite outcome. What was the actual result?
It was 5.5% stroke or death in the combo group versus 6.6% in the aspirin group alone.
And so this gives you a 1.1% absolute difference. They did calculate a hazard ratio, and it was statistically significant. How about the secondary outcomes?
The secondary outcomes were subsequent ischemic stroke, 5.0% in the combo group versus 6.3% in the aspirin group alone.
And that was statistically significant as well. However, the incident of disability was not statistically different between the two groups. It was 23.8% versus 24.1%.
Yeah, and severe bleeding was greater in the combo group. It was 0.5% versus 0.1% in the aspirin group alone, which has a p-value of 0.001.
Barb, you know what time it is?
I have no idea.
It's time to talk nerdy! And I've got 5 nerdy questions to go through that threaten the validity of this study. Ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, I'll start it off. And the first one, this is about industry funding. This trial was sponsored by the maker of ticagrelor, and multiple authors reported financial conflicts of interest. A Cochrane systematic review and meta-analysis has reported that industry-funded studies have more favorable efficacy results and conclusions compared to non-industry-funded studies. These differences cannot be explained by the standard risk of bias assessment tools. However, that does not make these conclusions wrong, but it should make us more skeptical of the conclusions and the author's interpretations.
And the second one, Ken, is about low acute ischemic stroke and high TIAs. These are very select patients with many exclusion criteria. This makes it difficult to apply the results to all low acute ischemic strokes and high-risk TIA patients.
That's a good point. Point number 3 is about the composite outcome. And you know, Barb, I've said it many times on this podcast.
There can be only one
primary outcome. And their primary outcome was stroke or death within 30 days. While they did find a statistical difference between the combination therapy and aspirin alone, the difference was actually driven by stroke. there was no statistical difference in death between the two groups. It was 0.6% versus 0.5%.
That is absolutely true, Ken. Let me get to the fourth point, the relative versus absolute risk reduction. The authors demonstrated a 17% relative reduction in their composite primary outcome, or a 1.1% absolute risk reduction. This gives a number needed to treat for benefit of 90, or disease-oriented outcome, a DOO, of stroke, because there was no difference in death or disability, which are patient-oriented outcomes, the POOs.
I can't believe I've got you recorded now saying POOs and DOOs. But for serious adverse events, there was a 500% relative increase in severe bleeding, but that represents only a 0.4% absolute increase. And this gives a number needed to treat for harm of 250. And so that's why it's really important to know, are we talking about a relative or an absolute risk reduction?
Good point, Ken. Let me get to the fifth point, the length of treatment. The study only looked at 30 days for their outcomes. Patients with small strokes or high-risk TIAs are going to be on antiplatelet drugs indefinitely. It would have been helpful to see longer-term outcomes of at least 90 days, like many stroke studies, or better, even years.
Yeah, because there's some questions that remain. Does the efficacy continue with length of time? Would mortality benefit become statistically significant with more time? Would the severe adverse event rates increase with time? It is interesting that the premature discontinuation rate was 4 times higher in the combination group. Now, 4 times higher is a relative number. The absolute number was 2.6% versus 0.6%. So there was a 2% absolute difference in discontinuation. But you were more likely to discontinue the combination therapy due to bleeding than in the aspirin therapy alone group. This does not even address the additional cost of ticagrelor. I looked it up on a U.S. website, and for a 1 month supply of ticagrelor, it's $360 a month versus, ready for this? You know how much aspirin costs a month in the U.S.? Any idea, Barb?
Unbelievable. I was not aware that it was such a huge difference.
$1 a month to take aspirin for the month versus $360. Now, I guess if you were in the combination group, it would be $361. All right, that's the end of the nerdy section. Now it's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusion.
Well, I'm pretty sure that you and I generally agree with the author's conclusions.
Well, then why don't you give us an SGEM bottom line?
The bottom line of this study is that ticagrelor in combination with aspirin cannot be routinely recommended at this time. The decrease in subsequent strokes comes at a cost of increased serious bleeding and no increase in good neurological outcome. A risk assessment and shared decision making is encouraged.
All right, how about you give us a case resolution?
Well, Ken, to be very honest, I never discharge these patients in my institution because our neurologist does. So why don't you give us a case resolution?
Oh, flipping it around on me. Okay, I can play that game. All right, well, in my clinical situation, I don't have a neurologist. I'm a community physician. We have a community hospital with a community emergency department. And the emergency department doctors are the typical ones that either admit or discharge these patients. So for me, in my clinical practice setting, which is obviously different than yours and maybe different than other people who are listening to this podcast, I would discharge the patient home with aspirin alone with an urgent TIA stroke clinic follow-up in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Ken, what would be your clinical application?
Well, with antiplatelet drugs and anticoagulants, there's always this trade-off. While adding another antiplatelet drug to aspirin alone has the potential to increase efficacy, it also increases the potential harm. I will be more likely to prescribe dual therapy for patients who are in high risk of coronary artery disease and low bleeding risk, while I'll be less likely to prescribe this dual therapy or combination therapy for a patient who's at low risk of coronary artery disease and has a high risk of bleeding.
Well, that sounds reasonable, but back to your practice. What do you tell your patient when you discharge them?
Yeah, that's always an important point. How do you take this, you know, article that's published in New England Journal of Medicine, put it in context with the rest of the literature, and then try to speak to a patient that they can understand? And so for me, I would say something like, you've had a mild stroke. I would recommend taking a low-dose aspirin every day. Where I work, that's 81 milligrams, but I know in other countries it can be anywhere between 75 milligrams and 100 milligrams a day. I would tell the patient that this can lower your risk of having another stroke. We could also add, though, another drug. Now, this other drug can lower your risk of having another stroke even more. However, it can also increase your risk of having a serious bleed. Now, the combination of both drugs has not been shown to improve your neurologic function, and it also is expensive.
Well, Ken, that sounds like a very good explanation to your patient, and I think it really helps in shared decision making.
Thank you. But it's time to move on to the Keener contest. And last week's winner was Brandon Snyder, a student at Ohio University Heritage College of Osteopathic Medicine. He knew the diagnosis that we were looking for was milk alkali syndrome. Do you have a question for us this week?
Yeah, I have a good question, Ken. What year did they change the definition of TIA?
Yeah, that's actually a good question, because when you're reading the literature, you have to know, when did they change that definition of TIA? Because that impacts the results, and it does impact how we interpret those results. So if you know the answer of what year they changed the definition of TIA, then send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thanks, Barbara, for coming on and being the guest skeptic.
Thank you so much, Ken. It was great fun recording this podcast with you.
Can you do one final task for me?
Of course.
Could you read the SGEM tagline?
Okay, here we go. Thank you for listening, and remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.